Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Friday, September the 24th. This is the first Friday of autumn. If you can believe that, sometimes the temperatures don't necessarily lead you to think that, but it is the first Friday of autumn. And tonight we're going to be chatting with our good friend George Rodriguez from South Texas. Lots of things to get into, as always, when we chat with George. There was a very overblown, exaggerated incident where a Border Patrol agent on a horse was accused of whipping a man on the ground. No such thing happened. In fact, the photographer who took the photo is defending the man on the horse. Very interesting situation. Reverend Sharpton was in South Texas, and I think he got a taste of, Texas very, very fast. Redistricting is going to be the big story here over the next couple of weeks, and maybe there's going to be a candidate for governor named Beto. We'll see how that works out. Let me say hello to our friend George Rodriguez. George, this is the first Friday of autumn. What's the temperature down there in lovely San Antonio?
Well, I'll tell you, the past 2 days they have been absolutely gorgeous. I mean, it does feel like autumn for us. I just was outside in the backyard, and it is really, really, really nice. The temperature is in the low 80s, and it is the humidity is very, very low. It just feels really nice outside. I mean, just really spectacular.
So they're going to make a song, Frank Sinatra. They're going to do a version of that Frank Sinatra song, Autumn in New York. They're going to call it Autumn in San Antonio.
There you go.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's not as warm here as it was last week. I think it was in the high 80s today. But we'll take that. We'll take that because it was pretty nasty, almost triple digits, George, the week before. So we'll take 86. But there is a transition from summer to fall that we see up here. Maybe it's the same in South Texas, but up here, it's a transition. It's not a quick transition, but it starts moving in that direction, and then you wake up one day in the second or third week of October, and you go outside and it's 50 degrees, and you say, oh, wow, what a wonderful welcome, the autumn after the summer. But anyway, so I think over the next few months when we chat, we'll be talking, we won't be talking about 100-degree temperatures, I think, between now and quite some time, George.
Yeah, it is, we can feel the change of seasons here. And, football is in the air, of course.
Right.
And low humidity and cool temperatures. So we like it.
Yeah, I think that's always the first sign that you're in September into October when you're driving around on Friday nights and see all these lights for football games. That's, that's a sign that you're in Texas in late September in the fall. Well, George, a lot of stuff happening down in South Texas. And I've got to begin by talking about this incident that has been blown totally out of proportion with the rider on the horse and the allegation, totally untrue, that he was using a whip to hit a black man, in this case, a black Haitian man. And this whole thing has been blown so out of proportion, the photographer came out defending the rider or the man on the horse. And, well, first of all, your reaction, George, because I know you're in touch with Border Patrol a lot. I know you a lot of people who work in Border Patrol. Tell me what they think about this, because I understand the president of the union came out today really hard against the allegations that this was something out of the racist past or something like that, George. So tell me what you're hearing. Give me your reaction, of course, and tell me what you're hearing about the Border Patrol down there, George.
Well, the union chief, let me tell you, the union chief is a good friend of mine. I've met him several times. He's been on my show several times. He is a real gentleman. I mean, he is really, really a conscientious law enforcement agent. And he is outraged and livid over this situation. The morale of the Border Patrol was already low because the policies of this administration have been such that they have been hamstrung. They have been limited in what they can do. They have been turned into Walmart greeters in most cases, and the role has been minimized. And then on top of that, now they are demonized for nothing, for absolutely nothing. On top of that, the president himself comes out and condemns them. I mean, where is the sense of fairness that he's always talking about? Where is the sense of openness and allowing for an investigation to go forward? It is just ridiculous, his behavior. So the morale of the agents has gone right down the tubes.
Right.
On top of that, the agent in question, whose picture was taken, has been put on leave, on administrative leave. He is being punished for doing his job. These Haitians, and I have seen footage from private folks who were down there videotaping it. These folks were not following orders and returning to Mexico. They were resisting.
Right.
Now, again, this is so similar to the situation that we have seen with police officers all over the place. Where someone resists, they are taken down, and then the police officer is the bad guy, is the criminal.
Mm-hmm.
This situation is so misrepresented. The agents were just doing their job. They did not do anything wrong. On the contrary, they were very, very, very easygoing, simple in their approach. There were times where the horses did gallop, but it was galloping because people were trying to evade and trying mm-hmm. to get back in,
right.
And they were stopping them.
Exactly.
And but that somebody was whipped is just out. Maxine Waters, the congresswoman from California, made the comment that this was worse than the slaves. Well, I got news for you. These folks are not being placed on boats forcibly and brought to the United States forcibly
right.
in
That's
chains.
Right.
These folks are coming on their own volition and then demanding to stay.
Right.
It is just, you know, it is just so aggravating, this narrative, this incident being played up. And MSNBC and CBS and all of these other mainstream media are being disingenuous, too.
Right. No, I agree. I mean, thank God I don't watch MSNBC. But I wouldn't be surprised that they're doing that. But it's so unfair. Because first of all, this is a law officer, a policeman Border Patrol agent, who is enforcing the laws of the United States, and the people on the ground who are evading the law, are people who crossed illegally into the United States. As you said, the comparison to slavery is outrageous. The comparison to slavery were people who were forced to come over here, and they had no freedom. These Haitians chose to come to the United States. In fact, from what we understand, many of them were in some other countries and came up here as well. So I agree with you. And what makes me angry, George, is that it seems to be the way this Democrat Party of today operates. The first thing they do is they criticize the police, as we saw last summer. And now they're criticizing the Border Patrol agent. And then now you have the president of the United States, who my guess is he has not even seen the video or the picture, but he's reading something, and it's just irritating. You would think that the president would have delivered a different message. You would think that he would have said something like, look, we're going to look into it, but these are courageous Americans who are protecting us. They do a great job, and that we'll look at the incident, but we're not going to demonize anybody over a photograph. That's what I think would have made more sense. But anyway, this is bad. And, of course, that leads us to the next topic, George, and that's Reverend Sharpton, who showed up in South Texas. I'm not sure what he came for, but he came, I guess, to talk about how racist all of this is. I didn't know that that the Reverend was ever that concerned with Haitians before, but I guess he is now. And tell me, he didn't get a very good welcome. I saw the video on TV, and I read about it. It was like he spoke for 2 minutes, and it was like a 2-minute warning to get the heck out of Texas, George.
Yeah, he was, again, when these race baiters come to Texas, this is not Chicago, this is not Detroit, it's not Newark, it's not Portland, where, you know, the place is filled with little snowflakes. This situation that he went, the people were already angry. You've got to understand that the vast majority of the Border Patrol agents that are down there right now are Hispanic. I mean, the majority of them. On top of that, not only are the majority of the community, which is Hispanic, is very, very upset with the disruption that these Haitians have caused. Not to mention the disruption that the Biden administration's policies have already caused. Okay, so, you know, you've got people that are already angry. And then this guy shows up to try to make the Haitians, the illegal aliens, the victims, and the Border Patrol agent, the bad guy. Well, that went over like a lead balloon. And he was quickly confronted. He was shouted down. He was, he had several advisors. I mean, I don't know if you saw the video, but he shows up in a black Cadillac SUV. I mean, give me a break. So he shows up in this black Cadillac SUV, but before he even gets out of there, he's got three or four, they look like henchmen, but I guess they are bodyguards that jump out and push the crowd back and stand there and look mean and menacing. And then, this is a reverend? I mean, give me a break. Right. And so he gets out and he gives this stern look around, and he walks around with a couple of the leftists that were there that were egging him on. And then when he tries to speak, the roof fell in on him. I mean,
yes.
People surrounded him and started screaming and yelling and calling him a phony and asking him about Tawana Brawley, the incident where he, back in New York, way back in the 80s or 70s, where he, in the 80s, I think it was, where he falsely accused the New York police. This guy really didn't know what he was getting into. And he quickly got back in and left. I anticipated that they were going to make some kind of announcement that he had been menaced, that he had been attacked. They still might. But, he retreated really, really quick.
Yeah, no, it must have been a shock for him. Thankfully, nothing did happen to him, because then that would have been worse. But, again, we go back to what we said before. What we have here is an incident that is being demonized, or the whole incident is being turned into a racial incident that it is not. There's nothing racial about this. This is simply a case of a police officer or a Border Patrol agent who was doing his job. And the idea that now we're going to demonize this guy and compare what he was doing with the history of slavery, I mean, come on. Well, I'm sure that back 100 years, 200 years ago, I'm sure that they were men on horses who were, chasing down and beating black men. I don't deny that happened. But the idea that this is an example of that, or it should remind anybody of that, I think is just demagoguery at its worst. The good news, George, the good news is that Sharpton did not succeed in what he wanted to do. It blew up in his face, literally. And I think the country, I really do, I think the sympathies of the country are with the Border Patrol agent. I really believe that.
Yeah.
I think the country
well,
is going to say.
We're still not out of the woods on this one. The Black Lives Matter, about 10 of their folks arrived early this morning, and they are now organizing a protest for tomorrow. So we're not completely out of the woods. I mean, these people, they're paid protesters. My understanding is that they've got friends from Austin and other places that are going to be arriving. So we're not completely out of the woods on this situation. It'll be very interesting to see how this all plays out, particularly since all of the Haitians are gone.
Right. That's right. I guess they've been put in buses and taken out to other places, which raises the question, George, before we take a break. I want to put a question out there. It's kind of a rhetorical question, but did anybody say during the campaign, vote for me, and we're going to let 2 million people into the country in my first 8 months? Do you ever remember that, George?
I don't remember that exactly being said, but I do remember that they were going to give free health care and that they were going to be open-hearted and
right.
The other things. But
well, they were going to be more humanitarian than Trump. I think that's how they said it, right? Yeah, they were going to be more humanitarian than Trump. But I think, at least the way I understood it, is what they were talking about the people already here. They weren't necessarily – I mean, I don't know any time during the campaign where the whole idea that there would be 2 million people coming into the United States like this in the middle of a pandemic, we're being scolded because we're not getting vaccinated. But then on the other hand, some people don't have to get vaccinated, George. I mean, that's a pretty amazing double standard, don't you think?
Well, and then not only that, they don't have to wear masks.
Right.
They can gather in meetings and, not wear masks, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, think of
the... I don't know if you caught any part of the Emmy Awards this past Sunday, but it was really so hypocritical that one of their own called them out because they were in a big tent outside because, they didn't want to be inside, all claustrophobic. So they were in a big tent outside, but they were still close to each other. None of them were wearing masks.
Right. I saw that.
It was stupid.
No, I know. And the mayor of San Francisco was at a dance with a bunch of other people. She was not wearing a mask. This is the problem that these people have, and maybe one of these days they'll figure it out. But they're coming across very hypocritical. And, when you have a double standard like this where we're being scolded for not being vaccinated, but people who cross the border, I guess, don't have to be, people pick up on those kinds of double standards. George, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about redistricting, which is a big topic here in Texas. We'll be right back with our friend George. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, with our good friend George Rodriguez from San Antonio. We're talking about the incident the last few days down on the border. Let's move now to Texas politics. A big issue, of course, at the moment is redistricting. But there is talk, George, and maybe you've got some new input on this, maybe some new information, but there is talk that Beto O'Rourke could be running for governor. And, that's out there. Have you heard anything about it, or do you believe it's true, George?
Oh, definitely, yes. He is definitely interested in running. Whether it materializes or whether he gets support on it remains to be seen. One of the biggest headaches that Beto has personally is that the left poured in tons and tons of money mm-hmm. when he ran against Ted Cruz. And, he didn't make it.
Right.
In fact, he failed miserably, in spite of the tons and tons of money that he got.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is then he turns around and he tries to run for president.
Right.
And again, he fell flat on his face. Initially, you know, they were enamored with him, but then he fell flat on his face and he didn't go anywhere. Now he's going to, I mean, this is like a third strike.
Mm-hmm. That's
and,
it. That's
he was
it.
Adamant that he's going to try to run, and he's tried to hold a couple of initiatory rallies in Austin that, you know, he's had to personally pay to bus in people to attend the rally.
Right.
So, you know, he is one of these people that doesn't understand the word no.
Right. Well, I think another issue too, George, in politics, knowing when to run is as important as running. And there's no question that in 2018, he had everything going his way. He was running against, the most hated U.S. senator from the left's perspective. I mean, the left was out to get Cruz. So you had, if you remember, $70, $80 million that came into Texas, just to get Cruz. I mean, the objective was to get Cruz. And Beto had all this money to run. And even in 2018, like you said, you know, when we had straight party voting, when we had, the winds were blowing in the Democrat direction, and all of that, he still fell short by 4 points, which is a lot closer, honestly, than I thought it was going to be honest with you. But he didn't win. What matters is winning. And I think you're right. I think the run for president was such a disaster for him. Because he looked bad, he looked foolish, he looked like he wasn't ready, which he wasn't, of course. And then he also, I think the big mistake is that he went so far to the left that he would give Governor Abbott so much material for commercials. I mean, I can just imagine these commercials being run in Texas that Beto is going to take your guns away. And how does he combat that? Yeah, well, that's it. So, I mean, he's very vulnerable, it seems to me. And in 2022, he's going to be running in a totally different political atmosphere. I think 2022 is going to be bad for the Democrats. And I just don't think if I was him and I was interested in a political future, I would wait. I would pass this one out and maybe wait for another shot at the Senate in 2024, either against Cruz or if Cruz doesn't run, whatever. But if he was asking my opinion, and objectively, I would say just sit it out, Beto, because this is not going to be your year. And like you say, you know, he doesn't want to have three strikes. Three strikes, he's out, George. I mean, if he loses again, he's going to have to figure out what else to do with his life because he's not running anymore.
He'll be political poison at that point.
That's it. There's a lot of Democrats who want him to run because they think he's the only one who can compete from, you know, as I say, from Laredo to Oklahoma. But he did that in 2018. But again, this is going to be a different year. And you don't have that straight party voting anymore, George. I think that benefited Beto so much in 2018 because I remember seeing the posters. And the posters were vote straight Democrat. And that really not only helped Beto, but I think it probably helped a lot of Democrats down the ballot who benefited from that vote that he got, George, just because they were on the ballot, George.
Yeah. It is, the situation is that a smart politician is one that can control their ego.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think that Beto is that kind of a politician. I think that his ego gets so much in the way that he is bound and determined that he's going to be able to, accomplish this and accomplish that by running for office. Well, you know, I'm sorry. He just doesn't have the charisma. He doesn't have the message. Those two things are very, very important at this point. And, you know, I frankly think I hope he does run.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we all do, but I think he's going to find out that Governor Abbott, who I think he's going to be running against, is a much better politician than Senator Cruz.
Abbott's fight is going to come in within his own party in the primary. That's where his battle is
right,
going to come.
Right, right. And you're right about that. He's got two tough...
Not for the Democrats.
Yeah, he's got a couple of tough challenges there. But the polling that I'm seeing, and again, it's early, but the polling that I'm seeing shows that he can get out of the first round with at least 50%. And frankly, I hope that's what happens because he needs to get out of the first. I like Abbott, and I think he needs to get out of the first round and focus on running for re-election rather than having to come back a month later and fight a runoff. So I hope he gets out of the first round, and the other two guys who are running against him, Mr. Huffines and Mr. West, I'm sure they're good people. But I think Abbott has a better chance of getting reelected than any of those two, George.
Yeah, I mean, it's his to lose.
Yeah, I think so. I agree. Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about
redistricting. It's not in the equation.
That's it. Let's talk a little bit about redistricting. Now, that's the big fight now. And, you know, a couple of thoughts about redistricting. There was a very interesting article that came out in the Dallas Morning News this week by Ron Sammons, who was a Republican. In fact, he was my state rep, and he lost in 2018. Well, maybe he wasn't, because I think they had redrawn the district, so he was in 2016, but maybe not in 2018. But anyway, it doesn't matter. He wrote a very interesting piece talking about the challenges of redistricting. And the first challenge, of course, George, there's really three challenges I want to put on the table and hear your thoughts. The first challenge is you got to get 30 million Texans into 38 districts with roughly the same population. And, you know, that's easier said than done because, you know, you've got a lot of parts in the state that have grown very fast and other parts that are pretty isolated. So 30 million Texans into 38 districts. The second challenge is the districts have to have some kind of regional integrity. You're not going to have a district that goes from, let's say, Carrollton to San Antonio. I mean, there's got to be, you know, the idea of the House is that you have districts that represent at least some of the local interest in an area where, you know, the representative doesn't have to fly to go from north to south to see his district. So those are two big challenges. But another point that Ron made was that sometimes redistricting is a battle more within the party than between the parties. And he makes the point of the Democrats and how they're going to, you know, how they're going to figure it out. The Democrats have to have three, there are three districts in Texas. One here in Dallas, Bernice Johnson. There's one in Houston. I think the lady's name is Sheila Lee, and I don't know if there's one in Houston. I mean, in San Antonio. Is there a black congresswoman?
In Houston. It's Sheila Jackson Lee, and I can't remember the other gentleman. There's a gentleman who's...
Green. Green is his last name. Green, right?
Yeah.
Okay, those three...
Yeah, Al Green.
Yeah, those three African-American districts were specifically created for a black, for an African American to win, and you know the population mix was such that it was easy for a African American Democrat to win. But if the Democrats want to create Hispanic districts, okay, they're going to have to basically eliminate one of these black districts because the votes just aren't there to do it. And that I think is the challenge the Democrats have because they cannot lose. I mean, they cannot delete these three districts. They have to have these three African American districts, or otherwise there's going to be a huge fight within the party. So I don't know. I've said a lot, but give me your reaction to what I've said. Your thoughts on drawing up these districts, George.
Well, the problem is that the Democrats are not playing party politics; they are playing race politics. And the fact of the matter is that the growth in the racial growth in Texas has been among Hispanics, and it has been in Houston. I know for a fact it's been tremendous in the black areas. Historically, black neighborhoods in Houston are now Hispanic. So the question is going to be: all right, you want black districts, but there are no blacks in that district. So what do you want to do about that? And I think that they've painted themselves into a corner in that aspect of it. You know, are they going to play party politics where it doesn't really matter as long as the party has a seat? Or are they going to play race politics where they're going to want to have a certain race at the table to be represented? And, you know, that has been the growing headache in places like Dallas and Houston for a long, long time as the Hispanic population grows.
Right. Well, let's take Eddie Bernice Johnson. Her district here is extremely safe for an African-American Democrat, whether she runs or any other Democrat runs. I mean, it's a very safe district. But because of the fact that we now have 30 million people, her district is going to need more people. But if they want to keep her district, you know, if they want to keep a African-American congresswoman in that district, they're going to have to bring in more people. But if they bring in more Hispanics, then that means that other districts are going to be less Hispanic. So I think it's a no-win situation for them. They cannot afford to lose these three African-American districts because then they're really going to have a fight in their hands within the party, that is. But on the other hand, they may not have any choice if they really want to have more influence, George.
Yeah, it is, again, it's a conundrum that they've created on their own. And, you know, they're very, very good at screaming and yelling at Republicans about racism and about having racial equity and all this sort of good stuff. But when it comes time for them to do it among themselves, well, that's a different story.
Yeah. No, you're right. And I think you have a situation like in my own district, which is 24th, the new map or the map that they're looking at takes the district a little bit further south so that it incorporates a little bit of Dallas. So it would be Carrollton, a little bit of Farmers Branch, a little bit of Irving, and then pushes it down a little bit to the Dallas. Because the challenge that you have right now is that these districts, in order to have equally divided districts, many of these districts are going to have to increase their population. So these voters are going to have to come from another district or from another area, and I don't know how they're going to do it. I read, for example, that Sylvia Garcia in Houston, the representative from Houston, she's going to need 46,000 new voters in order to have a new district. Dan Crenshaw from Houston is also going to need roughly about the same. So where do these new voters come from? They're going to have to come from another district. And when you start moving people from here to there, that's how you create problems for the representatives in those districts, because they're going to be running for re-election in a totally different district, George.
Yep. You know, the fact of the matter is that redistricting has historically been used. Mm-hmm. Historically been used. I mean, since the beginning of the nation, has historically been used to get rid of politicians, either by the opposing party that takes control, or by the party in control that wants to consolidate a certain point of view. So it's always been used that way. It's nothing new.
No, you're right. I mean, if you look at California, George, didn't mean to interrupt you, but if you look at California, they've lost one district, and they're trying to squeeze out a Republican out there. Look at Illinois. They're trying to do the same thing. So, I mean, this is nothing new, as you say. This is the way redistricting is. But I think the challenge that we have here is that we got to put 30 million people in 38 districts. That's about, you know, what, 800,000 people a district, if my math is right. The districts that we now have don't have 800,000 people, so they're going to have to move a lot of voters around, George.
And, yeah, they are.
And for the Democrats, the challenge is they've got to preserve these three African-American districts, or otherwise they have a hell of a problem in their hands, George.
Yeah, well, I think they're going to have a problem with their politics as it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, everything from defund the police to having an open border. They are complicating the issue now by playing extreme race politics with redistricting. And it's going to be. I mean, they are going to scream and yell racism to high heaven.
Right.
Now, and you know, the media is going to help them, but you know, I'm not sure that they're going to be able to win.
Right. Well, that's it. I think you're right. I think you're right, especially with some of the issues that they've chosen to stand behind. I mean, this border thing is killing them, and I think nobody knows that better than Henry Cuellar down there.
Yep.
I mean, he's very vulnerable to a challenge.
A couple of them are very, very vulnerable. You know, what's been very interesting is how quiet the Castros have been in this whole situation. I mean, I thought that Julian or Joaquin would have showed up with Al Sharpton, but neither of them was there. So
that's interesting. That's a great point you're making, George. So let me follow up on that. Did any Texas politician show up with Al Sharpton?
Nope.
That's interesting. That's a great point, because you would think that somebody would have shown up with him. That, you know, some politician would have tried to, you know, I thought Beto would have shown up, but.
Yeah, really. Well, I'm not sure who will show up with the Black Lives Matter event tomorrow.
That's going to be an interesting one. I'll have to keep an eye on your reports on that. Well, George, a lot to talk about, but time runs out as always. But I want to thank you so much for your input. And please tell the Border Patrol when you talk to them that they've got our support, and that I think most of the public supports them. And I think that they need to understand that. It's just like, you know, when I see a police officer around here, I always say, hey, thank you for your job. Thanks for your service. And we support you. Just don't forget that. The people support you. And I think it's that way at the border, too. I bet you the biggest outrage in support or about this thing that happened with the whip, this whole thing that was made up about the whip, I bet the biggest outrage is coming from the people down there who are actually living in those conditions, George.
Yep. People who, you know, who own horses, people who are seeing this on a daily basis, people who are experiencing the crisis, they're livid. They are absolutely livid.
Well, I would suggest that everybody check out the Babylon Bee. As always, they've done the best in humor, and they're saying that horses are going to be marching in Washington with little red hats saying that Trump won. So the Babylon Bee always hits a home run. And I'm going to try to find that, George, and send it to you, because it is really, it's just great. Horses marching down by the Capitol protesting what's been done to them. Well, George, thank you so much for your time. Have a great weekend. Enjoy that new fall down there. And we'll chat the next week as always.
You got it, buddy. Have a good one. Take care.
All right. Thank you so much. Our good friend George Rodriguez from San Antonio, South Texas, always on top of what's going on down there. And I have to tell you that I am very angry at what is being done to that Border Patrol agent. He's being accused of something he didn't do. And it makes me really angry that the White House immediately jumped on his case without sitting back for a minute, say, hey, let's wait to see for the facts. We're not going to demonize a law enforcement officer, but no, the White House was incredibly quick to criticize the police officer, and that is despicable. Thank you for listening, folks. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.